So on the cover of your bulletin today, you will find my favorite scripture in the whole Bible. And I really feel that we are called, especially now, to obey these commands more than ever, to promote peace in the world and in our souls. So let's read this in unison today. Let's read it together, and it will be projected up here too. Philippians 4, 4 through 9. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say rejoice. Let your gentleness be known to everyone. The Lord is near. Do not worry about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. Finally, beloved, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, and if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. Keep on doing the things that you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, and the God of peace will be with you. Holy wisdom, holy word. Thanks be to God. Well, as I said before, I'm really thankful for Thanksgiving. And I just love this time of year when we are encouraged to focus on what we are grateful for. And I am grateful that today we have Salvador Sanchez Strawbridge here with us. You may have noticed his name out on the sign. And Sanchez, is it like a hyphenated last name?
Yeah, half Irish, half Mexican.
Yeah, half Irish, half Mexican. Isn't that a good combination? And so I love that he's able to be with us here today. I met Sal, and he has a couple of nicknames. You can call him Sal, and you'll also see another nickname on the video that we're going to show as part of his introduction. But I met Sal when his team came from the city of Santa Rosa, gang violence prevention program, to observe our Montgomery High School breakfast program to see if we deserved a grant or not from their project that they have. They all agreed that our breakfast helps prevent teens from getting involved with violence before school in this region. And so we are so grateful they decided that they could grant us $5,000 from the city of Santa Rosa. So thank you so much for that. And when we were talking, I heard Sal's inspirational story of his life. And so I asked him if he would someday come and share it with you all. And so Sal is here today, and we're thankful so much for your presence. And I just want to point out that he has a long biography, and so we did print it in the bulletin if you want to read more about who Sal is and his history. And then also, there's a couple of YouTube videos about Sal, and so we wanted to start out by showing you one of them so you'll get to know him a little better before he speaks. So let's watch the video. We'll turn the lights down.
It's Pocho's job here to capture those images and put them out there for the world to see.
He's captured me in a couple different occasions. He has a real gift, right? Anybody could take
there
a picture, but it's about capturing the moment.
Capturing moments of people who have never been photographed this way.
People are on Facebook liking it, and you know, you have thousands of viewers looking at it, and positive comments are given off from it. It allows the individual to kind of start seeing themselves differently from what they saw their whole life.
That's his other job.
Okay, let's try again, and we could put it on full screen.
Pocho Sanchez is an artist.
I've been a people watcher my whole life, and I always wanted to express myself, but I was never good at drawing or anything like that.
But he found something he was good at.
I started to see how much power there is in an image. You can take back your voice through photography.
And that power has a special resonance here at Homeboy Industries.
You're always trying to put a human face on an enormously complex social dilemma.
That dilemma is the way people see gang members who come here to take their lives back.
When, you know, you have pictures of enemies laughing together, you know, it liberates them to conjure up an image, because that's part of the problem, is a sort of a lack of imagination.
That's Pocho's job here, to capture those images and put them out there for the world to see.
He's captured me in a couple different occasions. He has a real gift, right? Anybody could take a picture, but it's about capturing the moment.
Capturing moments of people who have never been photographed this way.
People are on Facebook liking it, and you know, you have thousands of viewers looking at it, and positive comments are given off from it. It allows the individual to kind of start seeing themselves differently from what they saw their whole life.
That's his other job, compiling these images on social media through his Facebook page, The Real Humans of LA. Sound familiar?
I was really inspired by The Humans of New York.
A very popular website that shows the everyday lives of New Yorkers. He was inspired, but felt he could take it further.
I wanted to counter how people just focus in Hollywood or Silver Lake or Venice or, you know, Brentwood, you know, and I wanted to show the real, you know, what I see every day. I live in Boyle Heights in East LA, and, you know, to me, that's the real LA.
The real LA that was home for him when he had no other home to turn to.
At a very young age, I felt abandoned by my parents, and I didn't understand why they weren't at the house, you know, taking care of me. In the community, there was a gang, and so that gang embraced me and didn't care about what color I was, my last name, whatever. We don't have, you know, psychiatrists and all that. We have liquor stores.
So at the young age of 12, Pocho was lost.
Sex, drugs, alcohol, and gang and violence all started at a very young age for me. I got away from it all, and I moved down to Santa Monica and went to Santa Monica College.
Pocho realized the value of education, but that wasn't enough to turn his life around.
I thought just because I left my area that I was going to leave everything behind, but my behavior and my alcoholism followed me.
After years in a gang surrounded by violence, drinking, and drugs, Pocho found his way here to Homeboy, where he didn't just find a job, he found recovery.
And he found not only sobriety, but a purpose.
My favorite things is having a homeboy sit down, taking a picture of him, putting it on Facebook, and seeing how the whole world reacts to him in a positive way. You have to remember, they've never seen themselves in a positive light.
Carlos Lisiaga just finished serving a 13-year sentence. He says Pocho's photos are good for him and good for his community.
It makes us see another side of us that we don't see ourselves, you know? People come here and it's a lot more respectful than people think, and it's like a family.
The Facebook page, Real Humans of LA, is a space for any photographer or anyone who wants to tell a story.
You go outside and look into LA, it's all every color you can think of, you know, and that's beautiful.
Beautiful for the subjects and for the photographer.
My photography saved my life. My storytelling saved my life.
Life, a word that has a whole new meaning. Alex Janin, ATVN.
So you can see it's such a blessing to have Pocho or Sal share his gifts and talents with us today. So thank you so much. And you can just speak on there.
So can you all hear me? Am I
yep.
good? All right. First, let me just start off with a prayer. Heavenly Father, thank you for letting me be here today. I'm full of gratitude to be here in this space. I'm worshiping you, and just let me speak from my heart and from my truth. Blessed be to you. Amen. All right. Well, yes, so thank you very much for letting me be here. As you see, I was in Los Angeles for about 13 years living out there, and it was a great and amazing period in my life, but I believe God brought me home. I grew up in the South Park community in Santa Rosa by the fairgrounds. Actually, I also lived down the street here for a while, too. It's very ironic. When we were talking with the pastor, there she is. I was telling her, like, how ironic was that I was coming back to, you know, God is great. I was coming back to see if we were going to fund, you know, the program here. And I used to be one of the kids that used to smoke marijuana outside of, in the little hallway that you guys have on the side right before school started. That used to be 15 years ago. I don't know who was around then. There was a little spot, and every morning before high school, there'd be a whole group of kids there smoking, drinking, doing whatever. And now you guys created this program where they're eating, you know, feeding their bodies and socializing and, you know, going to school, because a lot of kids don't go to school. They go to school with an empty stomach, and we all know that it's hard to focus when you're hungry, you know, the basic things. So that's surreal and ironic, but it's beautiful, and that just shows you the glory of God. And when you start following God, what happens, you know, in your life. And so I'm going to tell you a little bit about how I grew up, a little bit about how I found God, and what I'm doing now, if that's okay with y'all. So, all right. So yeah, I'm like I said, I'm half Irish, half Mexican. Somebody said, "Oh, you're a green bean," and I just thought that was like amazing. thought it was hilarious. So my mom's from El Paso, Texas. My dad's from Birmingham, Alabama. They're both social justice activists. And I was born in Oxnard, California. My parents worked the strawberry strikes with the United Farm Workers. My mom was on the law team with Cesar Chavez. She went to the School of Law in Hastings. She grew up very poor, didn't know English till she was 12, but got straight A's because she wanted, her family was very serious about, you know, getting the American dream. It seems like she got it. And so my father also was very poor, grew up in an Irish family in Birmingham, Alabama, and also was frustrated with being poor, and he became an activist in the civil rights struggle. And eventually he got kicked out of Alabama for his work in civil rights and a lot of stuff he was doing, and it brought him to California. And Jerry Brown, the first time when he was governor, actually saved him from extradition, because he was breaking people out of prisons because he was a lawyer and he could do all kinds of stuff. And it was pretty amazing, some of his stories he told me. But the 60s were, I guess, an intense time. So I grew up in that. My mom was a very narrow nationalist Chicana who thought white people were the reincarnation of the devil. And it's, you know, it's so funny. She's like, "God got me. I fell in love with the Irish Southerner," you know. They met in that struggle. My dad was working with the labor, California labor, something with the state, and he was supposed to be like the negotiator between the growers and the workers, and he was actually with the workers. And so she was translating for him, and she looked over, and she's like, you know how you don't really look at somebody, and she's like, "I'm not gonna work with this guy. If he wants to work with us, you better learn Spanish, you know, this and that." And then eventually Cesar Chavez directly said, "You know, you either do it or you're off the law team." And so she's working with him, and she looks up, finally focuses on him, and my dad's looking straight at her, and she walks out of the room. And she says, because she's a speaker too, and I'll tell you a little bit about her. And she's like, "Oh my God, that's the most beautiful looking white boy I ever seen in my life." And so from there on, they fell in love. You know, she learned that they had more in common because of how they grew up. My dad grew up on mayonnaise sandwiches, and she grew up on butter and tortillas, you know. And so that was what, you know, united her, and she started to understand, you know, that we're all humans, you know, all our differences, this, that, whatever, it doesn't matter. They're all kind of social constructs, and it matters what's in here, you know. So I grew up in the movement. We moved up here to work the grapes. What happened with me is both my parents have law degrees. My mom, if you go down Mendocino, press Democrat, on the side there's images, Jack London, everything. My dad loves that. My mom's on that wall. She's part of the 50 people that shaped Sonoma County history. Working with women, immigrants, the community, all kinds of different things. Now she's the president of the first bilingual radio station in the country called KBBF. So we moved up here, but how did I get into a gang, right? It is amazing. I think it's kind of amazing too. But it just shows you that gangs are just a reaction to poverty, but it's really just wraparound services for any kids that don't have something. It gives you a false sense of that based on conditional love. Now, Homeboy Industries is wraparound services based on unconditional love. I'm a relentless love. I'm gonna love you no matter what. It doesn't matter what you do, I'm gonna love you. I will always stand in your corner no matter what. No matter what you do. Father Greg Boyle stands with people that have murdered people, people that have been, you know, their families, every kind of person. He's like, it is an amazing thing to watch your children kill each other, because he would work in these communities when they were going to war with each other. But it's about compassion, about kinship. and about real, like, you know, about what, you know, if you will be tested about what kind of, you know, if you truly have unconditional love for your partner, for your family, for your kids. And once we start treating the community like our children, then we're really working, you know, something, because no matter what your kid does, you're always going to love them, right? You know, and what about those kids that we kind of just conditionally love? Only when you're doing good will love you. But what about when they're doing wrong? And so when I was growing up, they would say Salvador Sanchez Strawbridge, they would say my name. And, you know, the white kids would be like, whoa, he has, sounds kind of like us, it's kind of a unique name, but he has brown, I have like green and all kind of colors now, but he's like, but he has brown skin. The Mexicans would be like, well, he's brown like us, but he has a funny last name. So every day they would make fun of me, and, you know, you're presenting yourself, I'm here, you know. And so when they would do that, I would create anger in me, you know, because I didn't know who I was. I didn't, you know. And so I'd start to hold that anger and, you know, feel it. And, you know, and you start to lose your innocence, you know, especially when you're young. It's hard when you lose your innocence in that way, when you already have anger in your heart. And so that happened. Also, my parents were out there saving the world, you know. I always say, like, the revolution starts in the house, man. You guys got to take care of your kids. You can't be out there, you know, doing that. So my grandma passed away, and she was very religious. And she was like my mother. She was my stability. And so for me, my friends, I'm sitting with two of my homeboys, and one of them is shooting dope, doing drugs with his parents, or his parents are just on drugs. The other one is an immigrant family, and parents are working for two jobs, three jobs. They're not home, you know? They're not present. And my parents are helping those people in the community, but they're also not present. So the streets were present, right? And so at the ripe age of 12 years old, I joined a gang, you know? And 15, I was one of the youngest people to join the actual gang in South Park. And through that, I would, to make a long story short, we get cut up a little bit, you know, when you're growing up. And if you don't have a connection with the Lord, you know, you're going to put other things in there, false prophets, right? So I put in gangs. I put in, it gave me identity. I'm a norteño, you know, boom, you know. It gave me that, you know. It gave me, I put womenizing, you know, ego, edging God out, you know. So I built up my ego. I had a nickname. I was somebody, you know. The kids, the Mexicans and the whites shut up once I joined the neighborhood, you know. So it gave me all these things. But no matter what, even when I, not that I walked away, actually my friends were very supportive of me going to college. There's this false narrative that do or die, blood in, blood out, or you can never get out, or they'll try to kill you. That is not true. I don't know anybody that's, besides getting in trouble in the gang, like there's certain rules. You can't sleep with people underage or somebody's wife or this or that. But besides breaking those major rules, nobody gets, if you want to go to college, it's fine to go to college. They were seriously supportive of me going to college. And I walk freely in my community to this day, and they're proud of me on top of that. And I work with kids that were supposedly the rivals, so it's not that way. But, and so I was filling myself with all these, you know, things to fill that void, you know, that I had in my heart. And I never knew, you know. You know, like, being with God is like drinking fresh orange juice, you know, squeezed fresh out of, you know, just getting it, you know, when you get that connection. And I never knew. And before, I was drinking like orange soda, you know, walking around this earth deluded. Because when you put marijuana, alcohol, drugs, womenizing, all these vices in between you and God, you're walking around watered down, right? You're walking around deluded. And I had never knew. I grew up 12 years old, imagine, right when you're going to being a teenager, when you're making that transition from hormones and all that stuff. I turned straight from a kid into an adult, but not even. I kind of skipped a stage, and I didn't get that connection, because when my grandma died, I felt a lot of hate, you know? Now I understand that God, you know, God doesn't give us all these things, like, you know, because he's mad. He gives us the power to be able to withhold it all, to be able to take it all, to handle anything. You know, my father has cancer right now. He has prostate cancer, and luckily they caught it, you know. But if something happened, I'm still going to be okay. And before, I would have broke down. But because I'm connected now, I have a connection. Boom, you know, it's in. And before, I didn't have that. Anything would happen, the whole world was over. And I was going to make more things on top of that. You know, you get one problem, and then it snowballs into another problem. And that's how you see people live dysfunctional lives, because they're not connected. And I didn't know that. I mean, alcohol for me worked. I remember the first time I had a drink of alcohol, and I was like, oh, I'm home. I can dance. I can have the courage. I can do anything, you know? And eventually, it stopped working. It didn't work for a while. And so, you know, I would eventually go to Los Angeles. I would, you know, I thought a lot of drinking was in gangs, man. I'm going to join a fraternity. It's a whole other situation. So I eventually got a master's from the University of Southern California. I'm a Trojan. Fight on. I had it all. I had the UCLA professor wife from UCLA, but it was all good. We lived in South Pasadena. I had a Mercedes. I had celebrity friends. I was one of the really well-known photographers in Los Angeles. And eventually, I'm sitting in this, taking a picture. I get this job at Homeboy Industries as a senior staff. I became senior staff, junior staff, and then senior staff. I was a service provider, then I started getting services, and then I went back to senior staff. So one of my most proudest moments is when I was washing my, I was cleaning my office and taking the trash out of my old office. And it's very humbling, but that's what happens when you gotta humble yourself. And so I'll tell you a couple of stories and I'll end, but I'm taking a picture of this gang member. So this guy, he did 25 years in prison, no education, no kids, nothing, right? And you would think he has nothing. I have master's degree from advanced great universities, traveled 27 countries, celebrity friends, really well known, beautiful, gorgeous wife that's well educated, and I live in one of the most prominent communities in Los Angeles, and I'm dying inside. And he is okay with himself. You know, he has a bus pass, he's living life. You know, if you ever see somebody that they're good with themselves, they know who they are. You know. And so I just couldn't understand how could he have, I'm supposed to be happy, you know? I'm from Santa Rosa, I made it in the big city, but no, I wasn't. So eventually, I couldn't live with the contradictions that I was living. Eventually, you're just sick and tired. And so I eventually went to rehab, and they helped me, Father G, the guy you saw in that picture. Went to sober living. And I'll tell you two more things. I'm sitting in my bunk in rehab, and I'm like, I'm 30, I'm 33 now, I'm Jesus' age, so every year after 33, I'm good. It's a blessing. So I'm sitting in my bunk, and I'm like, I'm 30 years old in rehab, the Salvation Army in Santa Monica, this and that. And then every time you start to go into darkness, if you go into gratitude, it really can take you out of that. You know, I was like, no, hold on. You can change your thinking. There's a picture of a guy up there with the cross he has when he got the blessing, and he used to have tattooed devil ears or devil horns on his head. Imagine that. What had to go on in his head to do that, to make that commitment? Both ways. And so, no, I'm 30. I'm doing something with my life. I'm not 40. I have a master's degree. These guys have no degrees. My family and my work is supporting. They have no support. If they mess up in this program, they go back to prison. If I mess up, I lose a job. You know, I'm actually confronting my demons. You know, and I said, you know, listen, God, you gotta do something. I need something. So I got on my knees and I said, take me. You drive. I'll get in the passenger seat. Let's roll. And take me. Do something. I need you to take the thirst from me. So I asked him to take the thirst of alcoholism because I did everything, but I just me and my you know I'm half Irish, half Mexican man. I like to drink, and so. He took that from me, and it was a hard battle. I went back to work, and they said that I was a junior staff now. I had to be in the program, but I got to do a lot of healing. I did therapy. I did anger management, all these things, and I got to just humble myself. You know, I thought I was this big, popular dude, but I'm just like everybody else, and so that whole journey, I kept going, and things happened. I did a lot of damage that I had to confront, and I had to restore justice. You know, and restorative justice is one of the most amazing things that anybody can do and be part of. And so, you know, through that, you know, I've been now, I just, 2 weeks ago, I just got baptized as a Christian. And if you would have told me a couple years ago, I had so much church wounds, I can't tell you, you know, that I was going to go hit that water, I would have not even laughed at you. I just wouldn't even have, you know, talked to you about it because it wasn't something that would ever, I thought would have happened. But when it's kind of like when you fall in love, you can't, it just boom, it got you. You can't, you know, you just have to deal with it because, you know, you're in love, it's on. And so God moved on me, you know, Jesus moved on me, and it's been like that ever since. I've came home, and now, which is amazing, just like this thing is amazing where I'm speaking to you when I used to smoke weed, right? And, you know, and, you know, loiter in your parking lot, you know what I mean? It's surreal, but that's how amazing God can be, right, when you start walking with him. And so now I am, so 15 years ago there was a gang fight, big one in Cinco de Mayo, 50-50 on people, bunch of shootings. It was amazing and crazy, and I was in that fight, and a friend got shot right next to me, and another friend shot somebody else right next to me, and this is Santa Rosa, you know, but it would happen, and everybody was like, we can't arrest our way out of this situation, you know, we need some real healing and real service. So they started the Violence Prevention Partnership, and so I work for an agency, it's the city agency that works with 75 at least partners to wrap around our children and give every kind of service you can think of, the police, the fire, mental health, everything you could think of, SAY down the street, social advocates for youth. We fund all these different groups, and just like y'all, we fund. And so 15 years later, who would have thought that the kid that was in that gang fight would be the person that is kind of the face of the agency that they created because of the fight I was in. And that just shows you how amazing God is and how amazing it is. I went from juvenile hall to city hall, you know. And that only, I don't think I'm extra special. I just think that, you know, God moves, and when he moves, amazing things happen, and I'm just, like, I'm still working on it. Like, the Jesus thing, it's a little harder on me. You know, I'm a highly, you know, educated person. I know history. I have issues with colonization and this and that, and I have all this in my head, you know, this mind stuff, and you gotta be careful, especially when you read too many books, you know. Those are books written by adults, and whatever happened with people using the church in ways that might not have been the right way, it doesn't matter. The word is the word. And, you know, I feel like I just have been following my heart. And your mind can say, you know, it says so many things all day long, but your heart is what speaks, right? And it has moved me to get baptized and moved me to feel comfortable in churches and with church folk. And I feel good, you know, and I'm happy and I'm blessed. And I still sin from here. You know, my sins I don't think are as deep. They don't hurt me as deep because when you sin, you really hurt yourself, man. And I think I'm still, my sins are kind of simple sins, I think, and things I'm just kind of working on. But I'm not making those deep wounds in myself anymore, you know, and that's what's beautiful. And every night I can hit my knees and, I forgive myself first of all, but ask God to forgive me and to let me walk with him another day. So for me, it's a 24-hour program, and I'm just really grateful to be here with y'all, and thank you very much. God bless you.
Yay, thank you.